Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, former CPG founder turned executive who finally woke up one day, 16 years into my career, and decided to take back my power and build a community for women in CPG. Tune in as we break down strategies that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses and talk about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or life-changing insights, this is the place.
Okay, you guys, if you love purpose-driven brands, I think you're going to love this episode. So my conversation today with Kim and Brittany Cook, amazing mother-daughter duo of Something Sweet Dough. They started this company along with Brittany's two sisters right after the unexpected passing of their father. And they really just have an incredible founder story. And in this episode, we break down what it was like for them when they first started out, how they were self-manufacturing, and then eventually they knew it was time to move to outsource and transition into a co-packer, and how they've taken this like really cool regional approach, which you know I love, and what they're doing with marketing, what their retail expansion looks like, what the product lines are going to look like eventually, and really just all driving it back to building a business on their own terms, which is also one of my favorite topics as well. So tune in. I think you're going to love this episode and enjoy. Kim and Brittany Cook, welcome to the It's All Happening podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you guys here, and I'm excited to learn about the Something Sweet Dough journey. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you. We're so excited.
Yay. Awesome. So first question for all my guests before we get into all the nitty gritty fun stuff is, what are you currently hustling for? And I want to hear it from both of you separately.
Yeah. Honestly, our number one thing is getting our cookies into as many people's homes and mouths and hands as possible. And so it's kind of loaded, but getting our cookies to be more accessible and into more people's homes.
And really just making our Something Sweet a household name. Mm-hmm. We would love for everyone across the country to be familiar with us, our story, and our baked goods. Mm-hmm.
Well, who doesn't love cookie dough, right? Yeah. So I think that is possible for sure. So Brittany, you and I met at the snack shop party over Expo West. I was like walking through the party and like sampling everything. And we realized that we were Instagram friends, which is how you just become friends with people these days, right? And then I saw you guys at Expo West as well. And Kim, I saw you, I didn't get a chance to talk to you, but, we, you know, got connected and here we are today. So I'm so glad that we're like finally making this happen. So ladies, your company has a very emotional origin story, and I would love for you to just kick us off with how you guys got into this business and how the whole Something Sweet Dough journey started for you.
Okay. Well, Brittany is the middle of three daughters. My husband and I have three girls. And my husband unexpectedly passed away in November of 2021. All three of my girls were living in Colorado at the time. After he passed, Brittany and my younger daughter moved home. I had been in CPG, in pet specifically, and about 10 months after I lost my job, and then the job that Brittany had, she had lost that. So we were really kind of at a crossroads. I'm a self-taught baker, love to tinker in the kitchen, and my husband had a very big entrepreneurial spirit, but we never had the opportunity to pursue it. His dream was to have a family business. So it was Brittany's idea. She came to me. She said, "Mom, maybe this is kind of a sign that we should do something as a family." And we had a family meeting. We said, "What do you think?" Everybody's like, "What do you want to do?" And then Britt had said, "You always have have had frozen cookie dough in our freezer. What if we start there? And so it seemed fitting. It was my husband's favorite cookie that I made, mm-hmm. and something that my kids had grown up with. So it was a great opportunity for us to share our cookies with everybody.
Wow. So, okay. So you had decided that you guys were going to start this business because it sounds like there was just a whole bunch of like massive changes happening in your lives at the time. People losing jobs and, you know, you guys lost like the pillar of your family. That must have been like, how does like a family even deal with that? Like what, like how, you, I imagine you have to really dig deep to be able to, just continue on every day in that type of situation.
Totally. And I think like for us as a family, like when you're faced with that level of grief and loss in multiple aspects of our lives, we really came to this pivotal point where it was, if not now, when? Mm-hmm. And that could have been us. So we can let the grief really smother us, or we can channel the pain into something so purposeful and meaningful that it actually has healed us in a lot of ways that we didn't even expect it could.
And I think the whole experience of losing my husband and then starting this business really highlighted the amount of grit that we have as a family. Mm-hmm. And we persevere and we have learned to pivot and adapt very quickly. And those skills have really helped us in growing this business.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. You have to have so much grit to be able to like sustain the first couple years of being in business. Yeah. So how long was it after your dad had passed mm-hmm. before you guys started this business? Like what was that? What was that time period?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everything we do has intention and meaning behind it, even if people don't know it. So mm-hmm. we decided, this was in September of 2022, mm-hmm. and we decided we were going to do it. We wanted to launch it on the 1 year anniversary of his passing, which would have been November 8th, 2022. Mm-hmm. So in 2 months, we went from an idea and a concept to execution. And we did a soft launch on his 1 year anniversary. We posted on Nextdoor, Facebook. We all drove around with coolers in our cars around wow. the Sacramento area, delivering cookie dough through the holidays. And then by January, we were shipping nationwide.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you really had like a regional grassroots launch. Yeah. So, okay, cool. I want to talk about your launch, but Kim, you mentioned that you were in the pet industry, in the CPG pet industry before this. So you have been, you know, exposed to this, you know, this type of business. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been in CPG and manufacturing and distribution. Mm-hmm. So okay. A lot of the same ideas and skill sets you can apply to this, but it is very different when you're doing it on your own versus working for a big company.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Founder life is so different than working on for a manufacturer, right? Like it's way different. Okay. So, all right. So you guys from there, you decided to, you were going to launch this company and you did it, you know, very timely with around the 1 year. And what was that first? How did you guys get this business going? Like, where did you start? Did you start with design and market research, or did you start with just your recipe and a co-packer search, or like what were your first steps that you guys made as you started to launch?
Yeah, the first initial for us was, one, we actually went to the grocery store and walked the frozen aisle and saw the white space. And then from there, we knew that packaging was key and that we wanted to put a lot of our money in the initial investment into packaging and to do it as right as you can, starting out with no knowledge. Yes. And so we hired a awesome design agency that did our packaging. And then it was nitty gritty from there. with just licenses and figuring out a space to start hand scooping because we hand scooped. And then scaling my mom's KitchenAid recipe to a bigger, larger recipe. And then just from there, it's just figuring out one thing after the next. But
And utilizing our contacts in our area and asking questions, and then people would give us referrals. Like, I had never been in a commissary kitchen before. And so just doing that and utilizing the big mixer and the giant freezer and all of that stuff, it was just trial and error, quite honestly.
Yeah. So tell me about those early days manufacturing, about how you got, okay, so how long did you self-manufacture for?
Over a year.
Over a year. Okay. And what was that like? Like, how often were you in that commissary kitchen, and, you know, what did that all look like?
We were in there every week, and we would, because we do brown butter, so we would have to initially start with browning the butter, and we would get that done, and then we had scaled the recipe to, I think we were in a 30 quart mixer at the time.
Okay.
And all of us, it was all hands on deck. And at that time, my oldest daughter was living in Colorado. So when her and her husband would be in town for holidays, we were like, everybody's in the kitchen. Yeah.
Everyone in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My in-laws,
our grandparents.
We had Grammy and Papa
all hands
bagging cookies and making boxes. And it was literally a family affair.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. I mean, also, you guys only, you started with two SKUs, too, which I think is super smart. But yeah, okay, so did they have the proper, like, was the facility outfitted for what you guys were trying to make? Or did you have to, like, you know, I know a lot of times people when they're, you know, they're starting out and you have to work with, like, a shared kitchen space, you have to sort of, like, make shift the space to what you need. Was it specifically for cookie dough, or did you bring in your own equipment? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was a shared space with other people, but they had everything that we needed within specific stations. And so we were able to easily use what they had. And it was a great facility to start out. Yeah. So
the big thing for us that we realized is we needed, for us when we got into retail and we were doing multiple, you know, 100 cases of cookie dough and building the pallet and all that, was the freezer space.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We ended up making a deal with the person who owned the kitchen and taking the whole freezer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was a big help for us, is so we could get ahead of it and plan.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Because that's awesome that you guys have a frozen product, but the challenge is just having enough space so you can actually build the inventory so you don't have to be in the kitchen 24/7, right?
Yeah.
So at what point did you guys decide, okay, it's time to outsource? Like, how did that happen? And sorry, before you get into that, when you first started, did you know that you would eventually have a co-packer? Or you were just kind of playing it by ear to figure out, like, how this business was going to run?
We quickly realized we would need a co-packer, especially after being in the kitchen for hours and hours at a time. And I think when we realized that we needed one is when all of us started developing carpal tunnel and scooping.
Yeah.
I was like, I think it's time. I think it's time.
Yeah, too, when things became very clear with retail and our retail growth, and we realized quickly that hand scooping was not efficient operationally. And also, if we wanted to continue to grow on this path, we needed machinery to pop them out.
And we even looked at, you know, buying equipment and that kind of thing, and it's just a lot of initial capital, and you have to have the space and setting it up, and we decided that it was much better for us to outsource it.
Yeah.
You're not able to really focus on, like, your sales and marketing. Now you have to be a manufacturer, which maybe isn't, you know, a lot of founders didn't get in the business to be a manufacturer. They want to sell their product, right? So, And then, okay, so you're like, okay, it's, if we need to, we need to figure this out. We need to outsource the production. How did you go about searching for your co-manufacturer?
Yeah, I think it was honestly starting with the Google search bar and going from there. I think it was initially just starting conversations, getting an idea of what that entailed, and each manufacturer did it very differently, and just figuring out who was the best partner for us as we continued to scale. And that was huge.
And one of the roadblocks that we would come into is because we do utilize brown butter and it's a basis of our recipes, that finding somebody who would work with us with the brown butter was a little challenging. If we were doing a gluten-free product, there's a lot more places that do gluten-free baking right now because it's a big trend.
Right.
So those were some of the challenges that we had.
Yeah. So did you have a lot of options with your manufacturer, or did you have like one or two people who could do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was limited for sure until we really built out the foundation for a manufacturing strategy to make sure operationally we were secure and really putting a strategy in place. It was really hard. There are a lot of options with manufacturing, but you just have to narrow down based on the needs. And also for us, it was the brown butter.
And location too.
Oh yeah.
You know, we had decided it probably because we're in California, we wanted something west of the Rockies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that made it a little bit more accessible for us to be there. Mm-hmm. And we also wanted a manufacturer who would let us be there for manufacturing and oversee and be a part of it. And some don't allow you.
Yeah.
To. So that kind of took them off the list for us right out of the gate.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially with a product like yours, like you want to be able to show up. And maybe it's not every run, but you want to be able to go there from time to time, especially if there's issues that pop up and you want to know that you can get on the floor and see what's happening. So I get that. I work with a lot of brands on manufacturer searches, and some categories we have so many options, and then other categories are so limited. Like you may only literally have one option, you know? And that option still isn't even perfect. So I would imagine for you guys, you probably didn't have like a plethora of people to choose from, but you probably had a couple and, you know, one clearly made sense.
Absolutely. And one of the things too, is one of the manufacturers that we initially had spoken with, we really liked them. They had a lot of experience, but he wanted to use brown butter flavoring, and he's like, it's no big deal. And we're like, no, it is. It is a big deal.
Yeah.
It makes it a totally different product. So
yeah,
that was really another issue too, is somebody who was willing to stick to the recipe.
Yeah. So is that how, okay. So, you know, just since we're on the topic of the brown butter, is that how you guys are commanding your premium price point, right? Like that's one of the big unique selling points for something sweet dough, right?
Yeah. So that, as well as in the chocolate chip, my mom is awesome with how to elevate that brown butter, and that we do use a mix of flour and almond flour, and then we use high quality chocolate chips. So we really try to emphasize the premiumness, not only with the brown butter, that is the biggest factor, but also with the other ingredients too.
Yeah. And there's obviously other premium brands playing in your space, but the only ones that I can think of are the gluten-free ones, you know, having like the traditional regular flour is just, there's not a lot of competitors out there except for the extremely big companies like Nestle, obviously. And I'm sure there's other ones as well too.
I mean, there are some small regional ones that we're aware of. And you know, but the thing that makes us so different is the brown butter, but our cookies are just really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to toot my own horn or anything, but we taste test all of them.
Yes.
And we let other people taste them just to see if we're missing anything, if we need to make some adjustments. And we can confidently say our cookies can go up against anybody's.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the customer reviews. I mean, even on your website, like people, you can tell like the product people love, absolutely love the product. Did you know that 70 to 80% of CPG brands fail within the first year? Yikes. Because they lack a strategic go-to-market plan, they start without enough funding, or they don't have a clear path to sustainable growth. We've got you covered though. So in Launch Lab, you'll learn how to launch, grow, and scale your brand the right way. We'll give you a step-by-step roadmap, insider strategies for success, marketing and sales playbook, funding and financial guidance. So this is for you if you're a first-time food and beverage CPG founder, you have an idea for a brand and you need a playbook, you're in the early stages and you haven't yet nailed your go-to-market strategy, or you want to expand, you're navigating farmers markets or Shopify and want to venture into retail. Maybe you're developing your product and you're delving into formulation or contemplating a retail entrance. You need strategic guidance. You can be operational, but you're still seeking to refine your go-to-market strategy. Launch Lab Masterclass March, April, May session is sold out. But not to worry, we're launching another session in September. We kick off that first week of September. So go to the show notes and sign up to be on the wait list to get notifications about when early registration opens up. Trust me, if you are doing this for the first time, this is an educational session you absolutely do not want to miss. Okay, so you get going with your co-packer. And now that you have a co-packer, you've probably freed up some time, right? In your schedules, most likely. So what did you start to focus on now that once you fully had offloaded this huge portion of what you guys were doing before?
Mm-hmm. I think for us, key first thing is, well, we are the sales team.
And operations.
And operations and all the above. But when we were doing our own production, we could not focus on the sales aspect of retail expansion. And, so now after we were able to find the right partners to offload that, it was now, where do we go and how do we want to strategize for retail expansion? So that's really where a lot of our time, and also keep innovating with marketing and social media, and how do we get ourselves continually out there.
And yeah. I think the other thing too is like we felt like it's the three P's, right? Product, people, and process. Mm-hmm. So we had our product, we have our people, us, and really then we could start focusing on the processes to make us a little bit more efficient.
So
we've been doing that too.
So how are your other sisters involved in the company, and what are their roles?
Yeah, so they are awesome, creative masterminds. If you look at any of our social media channels, we are the ones that do all the videos from scratch. And the girls are the behind the scenes for all social media and marketing. So they are awesome with that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Different PR. We've had some television appearances and articles written, and all of that has been read by the other two girls.
Yeah. Okay, great. So when you guys first started selling, talk to me about that. So you were super local and then you started pretty quickly going to national shipping. Then you started to approach retail. How did that go at first? And what types of accounts were you going after? What was your strategy?
Well, Brittany has a saying that we always go back to, which is grow where you're planted. And so it made sense for us to start in retail in our back door. And so that's what we did, is we went to I got the name and buyer from a friend for the Nugget buyer. And Brittany is relentless. And she just kept reaching out. And then finally she was like, we got an appointment. And
amazing.
We went in and we brought him fresh baked cookies. We brought him a sample to take, to bake himself. We had a little paper pitch deck. Mm-hmm. And of course we cried.
Of course.
Spontaneous crying when we tell our story. It's like, it always happens. But he said, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
And, wow.
And so
Nugget was your first retailer?
Yeah.
That's a great retailer.
That was in July, August of 23, and we were on the shelves by October. So in under a year, we were on retail shelves.
And we had no background whatsoever with retail, so we knew that once we got into our first one, we wanted to really understand and best utilize and support the store so that we became experts in the small retail space as we continued to grow. So learning distribution, learning retail, learning promos, getting demos. We did over, just last year, we did over 100 just in Nugget Market. Listening to our customers, making sure we have product fit. Between our partnership with Nugget, we've even updated packaging because of working with our buyers and our customers. So it's been a learning journey for sure.
Okay, so did you guys immediately set up UNFI or what type of were you self-distributing?
No. The buyer at Nugget, he gave us a couple different contacts. We had meetings with the two different distributors. We decided to go with a small local distributor, and it really ended up being a good fit for us. And they kind of held our hand along the way. And, you know, it was just a lot we didn't know. So it really was a good fit for that initial distribution into retail.
And we knew for us too, like getting into UNFI at that early of a stage was not strategic or smart. And we wanted to learn distribution because we had talked to so many different founders that once you get into UNFI, it's the big dogs and there's a lot to that. So we've held that off for a long time.
Are you set up in UNFI or KE now? Yes. Yeah, you are.
And now after doing that, I really appreciate going with the local distributor first, and I can appreciate how we weren't ready for it.
Absolutely. I know it really is. I have a client right now that we actually just got off a call setting up UNFI, and she's really having to reconsider it because of the 75% shelf life requirement and what that's actually going to look like. It may not be realistic. So you guys are smart to be able to go with a smaller distributor. Some brands, because of their category, aren't able to, though. Like with her specifically, they're not able to. They kind of have to. So it's tricky, right? It's tough. So you guys are in about right now, based on your store locator, it looks like you're in a little over 40 stores, correct? Great. So you're in some amazing indies in the Bay Area, in NorCal. I see that you're in Foxtrot as well too. So what is your long-term sales strategy? Like when did you guys bring Foxtrot on? Because for anyone who doesn't know, which I'm sure a lot of you know, Foxtrot's not in NorCal. So why did you guys decide you were ready for Foxtrot?
It is a funny story now for a lot of CPG people, but we launched. It wasn't at the time. We actually launched right before they closed, so literally the week before they closed, into all of their stores. So that was really a struggle. It was painful. But we have re-partnered with them, and we launched as soon as they reopened their stores and have been growing with them as they continue to open stores. It's been a great partnership. And our goal is to make our product more accessible. And so working with them was with that in line, and it's been great.
And our velocities have been amazing. And we actually met a couple people at Expo who buy our cookies at Foxtrot.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. I want to ask you about Expo West as well too, but what is your distribution strategy and your sales, your retail expansion strategy look like over the next couple of years?
I mean, for us, it's still always going to have the strategic growth. It has to make sense for us to really go national with the larger accounts. I think growing slowly but surely is our strategy, and making sure that we have the right support to support each of the launches that we launch into. It has to make sense for us. But it's one bag at a time, one store at a time. And we haven't even touched Southern California So we have a lot of growth to come.
And we've had some opportunities that we've had to pull back from that we just didn't feel like we were ready. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll revisit those at the right time. Mm-hmm. But we would rather go slow and steady, and then rather than just crash and burn and really get underwater.
Yeah.
And what was it about those opportunities that you feel like, we're just not there yet, we're just not ready? Can you give any types of details?
I think the biggest thing for us is brand visibility and recognition. Yes, you getting into those stores is great, but you also have to have the financial means to be able to support it. There's a lot more pressure with sell through, and there's more distribution facilities that you also have to open, which is a huge cost. So there's a lot of factors in it. It's not just, you know, saying no. It's there's so much behind that decision of no.
I mean, besides the obvious upfront capital you need to fund those POs, but the other thing is, and my concern was, is getting on the shelves, honestly, could almost be the easy part. Mm-hmm. It's making sure that there's turn and your product is being purchased.
Oh, yeah.
So that was really another consideration for us, where we want to have marketing and programs in place to facilitate the sell-through.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes getting the product on shelf is the easiest part, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have to set it up and put the strategic plan together. And not only do you have to do all that, but it can't just sit there. It has to move, right? Yeah. Or all your efforts go to waste. Yeah. So yeah, it's smart. I love the regional. I mean, I know you guys are in Foxtrot, but like for the most part, like you guys are really focused on, you know, on NorCal right now. And I think that's very, very smart. Yeah. So yeah, that's great. So talk to me. Okay, so I saw you guys at Expo West. Give me like your quick review of Expo. I love hearing from brands, their experience, and if they felt like it was worth it, and will they go back next year? And just give us your quick review on Expo.
Yeah, I think it was honestly, you have to time it right, because I think there is a time in business where it doesn't make sense. For us, our distribution opened, and we were ready for that and open to the opportunities. The ROI made sense for us, and we did everything very affordably the way that we best could. And you can't put a price tag on the people that you meet. And I really think that CPG, and I think you could probably agree with this, CPG is a people business. And so for us to meet our specific buyers right now, start relationships right now for future partnerships, is invaluable. And so you can't put a price tag on that. And also the energy of being there and being with people who are so like-minded is contagious, and it's awesome. It's a great space.
The other thing is that I was really pleasantly surprised is just what an amazing community it is. Mm-hmm. And we met other founders from other product lines and other CPG companies, and you know, exchanged information, and everybody's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even though you're competing, it's everybody knows how hard it is, and it's a really good community.
Yeah. And I think it takes an event like that to really bring people together. Otherwise, we're just like operating in like our silos all around the country. And there's so many shows that happen throughout the year, right? Like you could make it a full-time job going to all the shows and could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, even like as a small brand, going to all the shows every year. But I feel like Expo is great because though it is overwhelming and exhausting, like it really is the time of the year to connect with other like-minded people. So absolutely. Will you guys go next year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Yay. Yeah.
The other thing too, is it really kind of gets you there where you can really see trends too.
Yeah.
You know, just from a business perspective and just as far as like a creativity, it's really fun to see trends and what people are doing, and it kind of sparks. Mm-hmm.
I felt like people were doing really cool stuff this year. Like there were so many brands that were like launching crazy products and like new products and new ways of displaying things and new ways of serving things. And there was a lot of brands that were actually launching at Expo as well too, which I think is super cool. So yeah, I thought the show was pretty on point this year. I gave it like a solid review.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally. So tell me about your marketing. So what are you guys doing with marketing right now? Are you focused on community building? Are you leveraging your social media for sales and retail and distribution growth? Like, what's your strategy right now?
All of the above. I mean, I think we're, you know, in the next couple of months, we're kind of switching gears and going to try some new things. But right now it's kind of been like a who, what, when, where, why, getting the dough into people's hands organically, some influencer partnership, creating content that really addresses like retail, but also just the product and how to use it. Repetition is just showing our product constantly. And just trying to find ways to get creative, to get it into people's hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the other thing too, because we did just have a meeting about our marketing, we have some upcoming launches coming up. So those were very specific in targeting certain demographics and geography to support those launches.
Yeah. Who is your customer?
Yeah. So we kind of have three little buckets of people. And that was really, honestly, really redefined for us more so when we were doing all our demos last year and continue to do demos. One of our top demographics that wasn't surprising to us necessarily, but is kind of surprising, is the older kind of empty nester
and retirees.
A lot of them would come with their grandkids and don't want to bake from scratch and would have it. Or if it's just the two of them and they don't want to bake a full batch of cookies, then they have our cookies. We also have the busy millennial, younger, who, like I said, doesn't want to bake or maybe doesn't have time. And then we also have moms. It makes one less headache in the kitchen to easily have an interactive thing for kids to do with them. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's like everybody. I mean, everybody loves cookies. But those are kind of the three key.
Yeah. And I'd say that probably, I think that 97% of our customers are women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's not surprising at all. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, in this industry, we all know this, but we are the people who make the household shopping decisions and the way that we spend the money in the refrigerator and in the cabinets. Like it's the majority is done by women.
Yeah.
So, okay, cool. So the older customer is kind of surprising, but it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. And you give them ease by having such a clean ingredient panel too, which may be why people haven't opted for a frozen option before, you know?
Yeah. And actually there's quite a few, like if just standing at the demos and really looking at customer patterns and buying, a lot of older demographics too will buy those frozen pies, which is right next to our frozen dough. So we're really switching their buying patterns by getting our dough instead of frozen pie.
The other thing too is just from, I know everybody's trying to be a little bit more health conscious.
Yes.
So the fact that it's like portion controlled and they can just bake one cookie, most people, even if I get a lot of bakers that come in and even if they're like, you know, they love their own chocolate chip cookies, they will buy ours because first of all, they don't have to make the mess, but just from a healthy standpoint, they can bake one cookie. They kind of, you know, satisfy that craving and then they can just move on
and be done with it. I know it's genius. So what does product innovation look like for you guys? Like what does the evolution of the product line or lines look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think our goal is to be a household premium dessert brand. So the innovation is very exciting of what we want to do and what we have planned. But as of right now, we're very laser focused on the product at hand, and not innovating too quickly, and really having a solid foundation with that.
Yeah. And we definitely have some things that we want to come out with. And we will be having another cookie flavor probably by fall.
Nice.
But you know, we'll just see where it takes us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, doubling down on what you have is so key and great. And, you know, why complicate things if you just don't have to yet? You know, I could see, you know, maybe you want to do a couple more SKUs, but really leaning into what you have seems really smart. So if you guys, knowing what you know now about this business, would you have gotten into this business in the way that you have, or would you have even gotten into this business?
I don't know. I think we talked about this as a family at family dinner last night. Yeah. And we all laughed. We all said no.
It was pretty clear. It was unanimous. Yeah.
I think, honestly, I think, and we've talked about this a lot too, like naiveness really has been a superpower for us in pushing through. And it has helped us to build this business. But I think if you know too much, it can also paralyze you. And this business is not for the weak. You have to have grit and you have to be able to push walls every single day. So knowing what we know now, I think we would probably question that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if we knew everything, if we knew now what we knew, what's the saying?
Yeah.
If we knew it then, mm-hmm. we probably would have had analysis paralysis and not done anything. But what we have done is we've learned to pivot because Britt, I think she says every day it's like all about we're problem solvers. So someone throws something at us and then we're finding the solution the solution. So that is, I'd say, Brittany's superpower. She's a problem solver.
I can see that. Yes, I can absolutely see that. It's so funny. Everybody I ask that question to says the same thing. It says exactly what you guys just said.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, would you get into it if you knew now what you should have known then? And everyone's like, nope. So
we used it to our advantage, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what is a piece of advice you would give to an early stage founder, even like a female founder? What would you say to them?
If it was within the food and CPG space, I would say do a lot of blind tastings, and maybe if you are the creator of it, step out so you don't get your feelings hurt, because it's very personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to be open to feedback and criticism, because not everybody's going to like what you make. And you really kind of, but if there's overwhelming feedback that is the same, then you really have to kind of take a look at maybe you need to make some changes, or maybe it's good for a family barbecue, but not a business.
Yeah, that's great advice. What about you, Brittany? What would you say?
I would say two things. I have a saying, and I know it's not grammatically correct, but everything is figure-outable. But it's true. I think if you are determined enough, and like this business fires us up. So if there's something that we are faced with, like, okay, let's figure this out. But also to any female founder or anyone thinking about starting, you have to do it scared. The scared feeling never goes away, but you become courageous. And if it's something you're super passionate about, like, it will all fall in place.
Yeah, yeah. And have you guys, I meant to ask you this earlier, have you bootstrapped and self-funded this company, or have you taken in other money or loans or grants or any, venture capital, private equity, like all the million different ways you can fund?
We're about 99% bootstrapped, and then we have taken in some outside money, and we're continuing to reexamine that as we move forward.
Yeah. Is your long-term strategy with this company to hold it and have it be this like legacy family business? Or do you think that there will come a day where you sell the business?
I think so. Since the beginning, we are building to sell. It is something that we want to be around for, you know, a long time. But our goal is to sell.
Yeah. And that's great to have. I mean, I always say that to people, like, always start with the end in mind, because there's different things that you have to do in order to ensure that that actually becomes a reality when you're ready, right? So, well, where can everybody find something sweet though? Like, tell us your website, your socials, your retailers.
We are, if you go on any social media platform, it's Something Sweet Dough is our handle. And you can head to somethingsweetdough.com. Our store locator is continuously updated there. And then we also ship nationwide, but join our email list so you can be the first to know when we have our restocks.
All right, great. Ladies, thank you so much for chatting with me. I loved listening to your story, and I love how you guys have built this amazing regional business. So congrats
thank you for having us.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, until next time.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
If you liked what you heard, it would mean so much if you follow and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. For tips and advice on your food and beverage CPG brand, you can find us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. or visit our website at itsallhappeningagency.co to be the first to hear about workshops, courses, and in-person events and freebies. Until next week.